Welcome to the Voices of a Stranger podcast. Here is your host, Reza Garajadaki.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Voices of a Stranger. I'm super thrilled today because we have an incredible guest, Dan Hebert, who is going to join us and talk about his life and all his experiences. And I spoke to him a couple days ago, and oh my God, he had so many stories, but we kind of judiciously found a couple stories that I think is going to blow you guys out of the water. Dan, first of all, welcome to the Voice of a Stranger podcast. So nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you, Reza. It's good to be here and happy to share some of my experiences in life so far.
Great, great. I know you were in the Air Force as a special operator, and you know, it's been a few decades, but please share with our audience kind of your life story before the Air Force and kind of what brings you here today to be our guest.
Sure. I guess the best place to start is, you know, where were you when you were a little kid? And we were, I'll call it an immigrant family into South Central Los Angeles, meaning that my father was from Louisiana, my mother was from Oregon, and we moved to Compton when I was about 4 years old. So I grew up not looking, really having culturally the same experiences as my neighbors and my friends. But from there, we moved to Boyle Heights in the East LA area. Yep. And got a really great introduction to the Hispanic culture that I still love to this day. And then we moved to Lapuani, California, which is out a little farther east of Los Angeles. And I joined the military at the age of 17, the day after my 17th birthday, for a strange reason. The Vietnam War was still happening. It was 1973. My two best friends, who were a couple years older than me, one had been drafted and went in country to Vietnam and was killed quite quickly. My other friend enlisted to avenge the death of our friend, and he too was killed within a matter of like 30 days of going in country. That just hardened my resolve to go into the military. But I joined the Air Force. I wasn't necessarily interested in dying, but when I entered, I learned that there were special operations, unique combat missions and things that you get and participate in. And it was very extended training, very difficult. But I will tell you, when you grow up in Compton and East LA, it's pretty easy to go into the military because all you have to do is exactly as you're told, and you just have to outlast everybody else. Now, what makes that story kind of interesting, at 17, I was 5'6", about 120 pounds. I wasn't what you would think a special operator would look like. And I was, you know, quite skinny. When I left the service 3 years, 8 months, 11 days later, I was almost 6 foot tall and 185 pounds. So there was a lot of growth that took place for me physically as well as emotionally. Some of that training, I used to tell people the best training I got for special operations kind of came out of my childhood. You spend a lot of time running from gangs or walking through dangerous neighborhoods, or there's just a long list of unwritten rules. You don't wear these colors. You don't talk to these people.
Sure.
You don't go down these streets. You don't stay outside past sundown. So you get used to this discipline, unwritten and unwittingly. And so when you go in the military, the easiest thing to do is exactly as you're told or instructed. It comes quite easy. So that brings us to the story of many that I have. But this one involves, this was about 2005. I had I was living in the San Diego area, and I had a 38-foot sport fisher, which is a boat that's really meant to go fast, long distances, and you hang outriggers at the side, lots of rods at the back, and you troll for big pelagic fish species like tuna. And at that time, I was moving to New Zealand.
Wow.
And I didn't really want to sell my boat. And a friend of mine convinced me to take my boat down to La Paz, which is you travel all the way down the Pacific coast, around the Cabo San Lucas, the point, and then you go kind of up inside of the Sea of Cortez, about 100 miles. And there's a large natural harbor there called La Paz. It's a great city. And they had a brand new marina there that was hurricane proof. And the price was really good. And so I hired a captain, which is somebody who is licensed and knows how to traverse great distances in boats. And the longest thing I had done was a couple hundred miles offshore, but this was going to be an 11-day cruise to get to La Paz. We took on extra fuel on board, lots of provisions. So it was the captain, myself, and then a third hand who was hired, Big David. He was about 6'6", 350 pounds, lived in Mexico, spoke idiomatic Spanish. So I thought that we were well prepared. So we lit out and we were, maybe about 400 miles south. And we started getting reports on the radio that there were some Mexican pirates in pongas, which are very large, open boats that are powered by one outboard engine, but they go very fast and they're very popular with the Mexican fishing fleet and anywhere along the Baja California coastline. And so I was on watch. It was at night. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning and we had radar and I had my boat well outfitted for cruising in inclement weather or in the dark. And I noticed that there was a boat that was shadowing us behind us, which is not typically unusual. Some of the fishermen will follow boats, especially big power boats, because they know they have radar and they can avoid islands and big rocks and other things that might be in the way. And so we just thought that it was some fishermen. Mm-hmm. But then they would come up and just out of sight of us, kind of go around the boat, look at us and come back. And we had gotten some radio chatter that there had been some pirates that had been boarding boats. Wow. And so I was able to take a little bit of what I learned in the military, a lot of what I learned growing up in Compton and Boyle Heights, that the best thing to do is to distract. And so we came up with a plan in the event that we were going to be boarded. They had followed us for about 30 miles and for more than a couple hours. And so I just decided that I didn't want them to come up alongside and start firing their guns at us if they had guns. And so
Did you guys have any weapons or anything on board?
No. In fact, it's highly illegal to have any weapons in Mexico, especially on a boat. It's the fastest way to end up in prison for many years and lose your boat.
Right.
And so we did have flare guns, which are safety devices, but they can be used in emergency situations. So the plan that I discussed with my shipboard captain and third hand was we were going to cut the engines on the boat, turn all the lights off on the boat, have our eyes get adjusted to it. And then we had digital cameras. And so I had Captain Dan and Big Dave down below in the sleeping quarters of the boat. And I said, they'll come on board. If they don't sense anybody, they're going to come down below. And I said, when they do, the first person that comes through the hatch, flash your cameras, turn your eyes, close your eyes, flash canyons, or flash your cameras, and it will blind them. They won't know what's happening. I said, you just start reaching and thumping on people as fast as you can. And I said, I'm going to be up on the bow of the boat. As soon as I feel anybody board the boat, I'm going to slip over the bow, go down the anchor chain, which was just hanging in the open ocean. And then I would swim around because I knew that they would probably leave somebody in the panga. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it's amazing when plans work out exactly as you think, which is never how combat functions, by the way.
Let me ask you this, Dan. What was when you realized all of you on board that you're going to have pirates come on? Had the captain experienced anything like that? Were they scared? What was the energy, you know, when you guys realized, oh shit, we got to defend ourselves and be ready?
It's really interesting is in situations like that, your adrenaline is really pumping. Your heart rate is up, but there's really no fear. I mean, both all three of us were pretty good sized people. I'm
sure
6 foot, 215 pounds. I'm not a skinny lightweight guy. Captain Dan was 6'2", probably 195 pounds. And then I already described Big Dave. So yeah. We assumed that we were going to be much larger and stronger than these guys getting in the boats. What we did not know is if they would have guns.
Now, I know you didn't have weapons, but did you have any kind of like poles or bats or anything that you were going to use? Or I know you had the flashlights, or what else did you think about defending yourselves with?
When you're in close quarters like that, basically having something in your hand is not helpful.
Okay.
It's because you're not free to move or grab or punch or hit or whatever. So I discussed that with Captain Dan and Big Dave and just said, hey, just hit him with your hands, grab him, get him down on the ground. And I said, that's going to be the best thing that we can do in such a tight space. And they'll be stacked up. Only one person can come through that entry at a time.
Sure. Right.
So let the first guy take a couple steps down and then flash, blind him, yank him down, grab the guy behind him. And we didn't know for sure how many people were on the in the ponga. Turns out there were four. Three boarded the boat and one remained in the
So you were on top. Did you see the boat approach you? Were they coming quietly? And I know your lights were
we were so far offshore, there was no lights. And in the particular part of the coastline there, there were really no cities. It was a moonless night. So it was
dark.
Really dark. There was no, you couldn't even see silhouettes. But as soon as I felt the boat move, I slid down the anchor chain and I swam a big arc around to the back of the ponga. When I was almost to the ponga is when the light show happened. I saw two big flashes. I got a real good view of the guy in the ponga. I just reached up, grabbed him by the back of his t-shirt and pulled him into the water. And he wasn't expecting that. He started coughing, spitting water. So I held him down for a little while to give him the sense that he was going to drown. He wasn't going to drown. I wasn't going to let that happen. And then I let him come up and I pushed the ponga away from our boat. Okay. And knew that they would have to swim out to get to it. And then I also pulled the, I was able to not pull. When he went over the side, he had an emergency strap to the outboard so that if you go overboard while you're underway, it shuts the engine to the outboard. So I knew that the engine wasn't going to start right away. As I swam to the back of my boat and I had a swim step, and we had already dropped the ladder so I could get up out of the water. All I hear is a bunch of thumping, screaming, and splashes.
Wow.
And when I finally stood up on the swim step of my boat, Captain Dan turned the lights on and he said, hey, what took you? And we looked out there and there was the three guys out there swearing in Spanish, thrashing about and then Big Dave, basically told them that the next time they'd get on the boat, that they wouldn't live to see another day.
And oh, good. So they swam back. They swam to their little boat and just left.
Well, they didn't leave. I mean, it's the freeboard on a boat is the distance between the rail and the water.
Sure.
And on a ponga, it's pretty high. Like it's not something that you could just reach up and pull yourself into, unless you were very, very strong. So they would have had to. Three of them would have had to help one to get in, and then they would have had to help the others to get in. So it was going to take them quite a while. But we put some distance on them, turned all the equipment on, went back on night running, which is red lights, running lights, and then had the radar back on, and they headed back towards shore. So
wow.
But that was an interesting experience.
Did you radio other like boats in the area to warn them, or how did that happen?
Yeah, there's open channels. Channel 16 is kind of a universal channel on the radio that people monitor. We also called the Mexican Coast Guard and notified them, and that was about it. I had no other issues for the rest of the trip down.
Well, How many people can say they survived an actual pirate takeover in the middle of the ocean? So that's pretty unique. Okay. So you told me when we spoke, you had some other stories, some of them that defied staying alive. So I want to hear some of those stories.
Well, you know, I think probably an interesting one is that my last year in the military, Vietnam had wound down. I didn't really see much action. I ended up getting cross-trained into a weather forecaster role. I spent, out of those almost 4 years, I spent almost 3 years in training. And so it was a good education experience for me more than anything. But I was assigned to a weather station in a pretty remote area of Alaska. And I had my weather station. And for exercise, I would put on snowshoes, my cold weather gear in the winter, and then I would snowshoe. I had a long gravel runway in which airplanes would come and visit and bring me supplies and things. And I would snowshoe to the end of the run, one end of the runway and back. And it's interesting how in a matter of 15 minutes, you can have massively different experiences, but have just as a profound effect on you. The first one was, is that, and I was a young man, I had just turned 20, and I was snowshoeing at a pretty good pace to the other end. And it was another kind of moonless night, like the night on the boat.
Right.
But the stars were very brilliant. And just from the starlight alone, you could see the trees along the side of the runway and shrubs and things. And I got this sensation of movement around me, like the shadows of the trees were moving. And there was a little bit of a light being cast. And I didn't really quite understand what was happening. And then I just kind of stopped and I looked up and it was the Aurora Borealis. I had no concept. This was long before the age of the internet. And I had no idea what the Aurora Borealis was or the Northern Lights. And it was just this amazing panoramic view of the sky alive with fluorescent green and rose color. And they looked like the bottom of large curtains waving in the wind.
What a sight.
I was so awestruck. And I mean, that word is really fitting here, that I fell back into the snow and just laid there watching this, just mesmerized. And it was probably the first moment of my life of insignificance. I mean, I realized that I was nothing. I was just a small, infinitesimally small, minute part of the universe. And here it was giving me this great performance. So I'm not even really sure how long I lay there, maybe 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
And then I got up. And then I finished my snowshoeing down to the other end of the runway. And then I was coming back and the Aurora Borealis had become very bright and you could easily see the snow in my tracks. And as I came back about halfway down the runway, there was a big set of bear tracks.
Oh, whoa.
And this is in winter and it's dark and they were massive. I mean, they were probably 12 to 15 inches across. And they had tracked me for about 100 yards because they came across a side of the runway, encountered my tracks, followed my tracks in the direction towards the end of the runway where I had just shuffled to and was on my way back. And then it turned off and went off the other side of the runway. Now, what is shocking about that is that's probably the most frightened I've ever been in my life. And it was because I was a long way from the weather station. And I don't know what the world record is you know, running probably a third of a mile in snowshoes, but I'm sure I said it that night. And so I went back and then about 10 days later, Alaska wildlife manager flew in and we were talking and I told him I saw bear tracks in the middle of winter and how they tracked me. He says, oh, that was a grizzly bear. I said, how can you tell? He said, because grizzly bears don't become catatonic like black bears when they hibernate. In fact, they get up many times during the winter and prowl around trying to find something to eat. And if they don't, they just go back to their den. He says, it's really extraordinary that you're here, sharing this story. He said, because that bear should have got you. And so, but that was real terror. Voices of a Stranger. I will tell you, you can be alone and be a stranger to yourself.
Sure.
And that's when you find yourself in a situation in which there's nothing in life that you could do to prepare for it. And you find yourself not even understanding your own words. You don't even understand the surroundings that you're in. I've been one of these fortunate people that I've survived a suicide attempt. And that had to do with the murder of my godson, that somehow I felt like that I should have been protecting him. I was in the process of adopting him as my own child. And the horror of losing a child exists. The double horror of having a child murdered is a terrible thing. So I found myself alone, and I found myself as a stranger. I actually went and bought a bunch of sleeping pills. I'm not really a drinker, but I bought some kind of whiskey or something, and I took plenty of both. I didn't even say goodbye to anybody, not even my family or friends. And I laid down on the floor of a hotel that I was in, and I woke up the next day, and there are many people that are religious, many people that are not, but I will tell you that there was a distinct conversation between me and between God, in which God said, this is not you. No. This is not what you're here for. I've given you a filled life. And now your duty is to go out and be among the living and to share the beauty of life and the graces that come with redemption and with forgiveness and with trying to live a life of service to others. And it really fundamentally changed me. And I have friends today that are near the point of where I was when I tried to take my own life. And it's hard because you can't rescue them. You can't rescue people that are in such heartache and sadness and despair. All you can do is provide safe harbor and to pray for them, send out good wishes and solicit those from others. And so the Voices of Strangers, I like the genesis of the program as you described it to me, Reza, dealing with Vietnam veterans and even Vietnamese refugees. And it started in the early 70s. And gosh, it's hard to imagine that I actually have history and experiences from that time as well. But life is a beautiful and gracious thing. And it's through strangers that we really learn to not just love ourselves, but love others.
Absolutely. Well, listen, first of all, Dan, thank you so much for being so forthright, sharing, some very, very tough times in your lives. And I know our listeners are going to take a lot from you. I know, as I told you when we first spoke, I was very close to Dr. Walter Capps, who was a huge advocate for Vietnam vets. I was a history major at UCSB. I studied the Vietnam War. So, I was really, when I was introduced to you, we haven't had anybody on the show yet to talk about Vietnam, and you lost friends and people you knew. So for me, it's especially great because this show began on the basis of the Walter Capps class and the history and the stories of Vietnam. So, thank you so much. I don't know if you have any contacts or webpage or Instagram where people would like to get a hold of you. We'd be happy to share that. If you send it to me, I'll put it as part of the podcast. But thank you so much for coming. And again, you survived a pirate attack and a grizzly bear attack in the middle of nowhere. So, you certainly have some stories. Thank you so much for being here. Any other words of wisdom for our listeners?
Don't retire. When people say, I've tried to retire twice, and now I just tell people, I'm not retired, I'm just tired. I'm still very active and still interested in technology.
That's great. Well, you know, one of our mottos here, The Voice of a Stranger, is live life with passion and you never walk alone. So thank you so much, Dan, for being here. I really appreciate it. And I'm really glad that you ended up joining us. Thanks again.
Thank you, Reza.
Okay, Dan. So I just stopped pressing.
Thanks for joining us this week. Please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or on your webpage at thevoicesofastranger.com. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and subscribe to the show. Tune in next week for a new guest. Until next time, keep living life with passion and make each day count.